speaker this morning, Anthony Clark.
Thank you all so much. Wow. As you know, Reverend Sharon's out of town, so I'm your substitute teacher. I've already told some of you today we'll be watching videos and coloring. I hope that's okay. No, actually, I'm very honored to be here today. I'm honored that you all came today. I told a story here last year, and Reverend Sharon invited me back after that, and some other folks wanted me to come back, and I explained that most of the stories I tell are ghost stories, like really scary, gory, blood, guts, not really appropriate for church, and some little kids' funny stories. But finally, I realized I have a story that I could tell that I hope is appropriate for church. You all can let me know if you agree with that later on. This is action, and this is, I told a fairy tale last year. And because this stuff really happened, it's possible I could get a little emotional during the story. But I want you to know, I'll be fine. You don't have to rush up and hug me. I'll take the hugs later on. If I need to, I'll pause, I'll take a deep breath, I'll take a drink. I will get through the story. I like to begin this story with all of us on the same page in the moment together, so a deep breath in and out. I never had to face death in a serious way until I was well into my 30s. I was kind of fortunate that way. My grandfathers both passed away when I was pretty young, but I wasn't really that close to them. I mean, I love them, but they were just sort of part of the backdrop of my boyhood. I went to their funerals. I cried because everybody cried. It seemed like the thing to do. But to me, they seemed ancient. It seemed like it was their time. It wasn't that close of a brush with death. One of my grandmothers passed away when I was a bit older, and I was a little bit closer to that grandma, but still, she was sort of part of the backdrop, and death buzzed in a little bit closer, but it still wasn't all that close. It wasn't until I got that phone call about 10 years ago, when I had to look death in the eye seriously for the first time. Greg had been a storyteller longer than I had been a storyteller. He'd been on this earth longer than I had. He was about a decade older. And I met Greg at a storyteller meeting. They have such things. They're not like recovery groups. They're for people who want to learn more about storytelling. I signed up for it down at the library. I walked in the door, and Greg was there, and he gave me a look up and down sideways, gave me that hairy eye. I gave him a look up and down sideways, gave him that old stink eye right back. He looked at me again. I looked at him. I knew right then and there we were either going to get in a fight or we were going to be good friends, or maybe both. And I was right. We stuck around and talked after that meeting. We became good friends. We started hanging out. In the beginning, we talked about stories. That's what brought us together. But we quickly expanded our repertoire to other things. We talked about our favorite TV shows growing up, our favorite books, our favorite sports teams. We talked about women. Yes, ladies, sometimes when you're not around, we do talk about you. What do we say about you? I can't tell you that. I would have my man card revoked forever. Greg had decided pretty early in life he was never going to marry. And it's not that he didn't want the experience. It's that he found out in his young adulthood he had a heart condition. He didn't think he was going to live past age 40. He didn't want to leave a young widow and some half-raised kids, so he decided he just wasn't going to go there. There was one young lady he wanted to marry before he knew about the condition. He met her up in college at St. Joe. The problem was Greg happened to be a different race than that young lady, and her family was not going to accept that, not back at that time. So rather than make an issue out of it, he chose to back off, love her from a distance. I remember when he told me the story about her, there was a little tear in the corner of his eye, and he was not a crier, and I knew he'd been loving that young lady from a distance for many, many years. There were other women he was close to, but never close enough for the big M word to come up. And then guess what? 40 came and went, and he was still here. And 41 came and went, and 42. And I said, Greg, you're going to have to stop telling yourself that story. Just because some doctor told you that years ago, that doesn't mean it's true. You're going to be around for a long time to come. And I was happy about that because, to me, Greg was a real friend. And I have just a few of those in a lifetime. How do I know he was a real friend? We used to travel around, go fishing together, stuff like that. And sometimes, yes, we would get on each other's nerves pretty seriously. Sometimes we get downright angry with each other. And there were a couple of times we didn't speak to each other for a month or more. but we always came back into each other's lives. And that's how you know someone is a real friend. So maybe it shouldn't have been a surprise because of his condition, but to me it came totally out of the blue, that phone call about 10 years ago. "Anthony, get down here to the hospital quick." It was the girl Greg had been dating most recently. "It's Greg, he's in the hospital. The doctor said he has 2 weeks to live." "What?" I went right down to the hospital. I went into his room. I walked in the door. I kind of stood just inside the doorway, didn't even bother going over to the bed. Greg was sitting up in the bed. He was totally awake, alert. He was looking at me. He looked fine to me. And I looked at him, and he looked at me, and I looked at him, and he looked at me, and he said, "What?" I said, "You know what." He said, "No, what? Why are you looking at me like that?" And I said, "2 weeks? 2 weeks? Nobody ran this two-week thing by me. I don't think so, buddy. That's just not going to work." And he said, "But the doctor said, no, 2 weeks, that is not going to cut it." And we argued about it. I used to be a pretty good arguer when I was younger. I'm not really into it so much anymore. But I stood there in that hospital room, and I argued with death. And I won the argument. 2 weeks came and went. He was still here. 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 2 months, 3 months. He didn't die. I out-argued death. I was pretty good. But he did get sick. And that first year, he was in the hospital for the better part of a year. And that was the time I was moving from Columbia, where I lived then, to St. Charles, and I was starting a busy new job. I couldn't go see him as much as I wanted to, but I tried to go see him as much as I could. And sometimes I would go see him, he would be totally awake, and we would talk about all the stuff we used to talk about. And sometimes he would be out. I don't mean asleep, I mean basically comatose. But I had come a long way to visit him, so I would visit. I would stay for a few hours, and I would tell him stories. And I would read him stories. His favorite was Edgar Allan Poe. And you know, later when he recovered, he told me he remembered every time that I came. He heard every word of every story, and he actually said that's what helped pull him through. And I used to attribute that to the power of storytelling, but maybe it's just the power of human connection. I'll never forget, there's one time I went to see Greg, and he was awake, but he couldn't speak because they'd had a tube down his throat. His throat was totally raw. He couldn't say a word. So to communicate, they'd given him this board, this dry erase board with letters around the board, and he would point at a letter, and I would write it on the board, and we'd spell out words like that, a very slow, cumbersome, frustrating way to communicate, but that's all we had. And when I went to see him that time, he had something he really wanted to tell me. I mean, he was just burning to get it out. And I knew that it was going to be some very deep, important message. "Anthony, I never got to tell you, I think you're the greatest man who ever lived." Or, "Anthony, you know I love you like a brother." I thought it was going to be something like this. So we really, it was kind of grueling, but we got the message out. And when we got the message out, it was nothing like that. It was three simple words: "My foot itches." So then we had to get into which one. You know. But Greg got out of the hospital, and he got better, but he didn't get all the way better. Sometimes he'd have good times, and sometimes he'd have bad times. Sometimes he'd land back in the hospital, and I would go visit him. If he was in the hospital, that's where I would see him. If he was home, that's where I'd see him. And we would try to carry on our friendship just like we did before. And one of the things that we always did together, Greg liked to go to this particular storytelling convention called the Chicken Festival. I don't have time to tell you the story behind why it's called the Chicken Festival. It's usually over in western Missouri or eastern Kansas, and this was like our yearly retreat together. And when we started going, before he got sick, we'd walk in the door side by side, two friends hanging out. Then after his health started to deteriorate, he needed a walker, and I slowed down my pace so I could walk alongside my friend. And then he deteriorated more, and he needed a wheelchair. And I was the one pushing my friend in a wheelchair, and I was happy to do it. And then things got worse, and he needed oxygen, and I carried his oxygen tank, and I pushed him in the wheelchair. And then it got worse, and he needed supplies for dialysis on the road. And I carried his equipment, I carried his tanks, I pushed my friend all over the place in the wheelchair because he was my best friend. And friends do that sort of thing for each other, don't they? 2015 came, and Greg really wanted to go to the Chicken Festival that year, but he really wasn't in good shape. But he made it a mission to go, and I made it a mission to help him go. We loaded up all the supplies, the tanks, the wheelchair, and we headed out, and I realized right away, that's a mistake. He doesn't have any business traveling, but he wanted to go. It was a terrible trip. We got on each other's nerves. Regrettably, I got impatient with my friend a couple times, but we went, and the last night of that festival, he told a story, and he told the audience, this is probably going to be my last chicken festival. I don't get around so well anymore. Later that summer, I was on my way to an event in Kansas City, and I stopped in Columbia to see Greg. He'd landed in the hospital again. I spent a few hours with him. Then on the way back, it was a Saturday night in August. On the way back, I found out he'd been moved from the hospital to a nursing home, and there was something about the visitation. I couldn't go on Saturday night, so I called him instead. And I called him up, and we chit-chatted. He told me about the nursing home, and he told me he was going to be out of there within the month. He didn't want to stay there that long. And I told him I would try to come visit in a couple of weeks. And I said goodbye to my friend. And I woke up the next morning. And I got the message my friend had passed away that night. August 9, 2015. Thought about that phone call. It occurred to me that I might have been the last person he spoke to before he left this earth. Something else occurred to me about that phone call, something very important, something life-changing. I'll tell you all about it in a couple of minutes here. I want to put kind of a mental sticky note on that part of the story. I want to tell you a little kind of side story. It's related. It's not really related to my main point today, but I think with a heavy topic like this, it's good to put in a little levity. And this other little story seems like it shouldn't have that, but it kind of does. In the aftermath of my friend dying, I was confronted with something. It was a promise I'd made him, a conversation we'd had a couple years before he passed. We were sitting out at Panera, enjoying a warm day and talking about nothing that important. And he suddenly got very serious, and he turned to me and he said, Anthony, I want to ask you for a favor. Sure, man, what do you need? What is it? After I die, I want you to take my ashes and scatter them in the Missouri River. Whoa, first of all, I don't like this topic, but since we're on it, sure, what an honor. I can't believe you're asking me. I'm so honored. I'd be happy to do that for you. But wait, wouldn't your family want to do that? Wouldn't they want to handle that? My family, they're just going to put me up on a shelf and leave me there. I don't want to spend eternity on a shelf. I want you to scatter me in the river. Promise me you'll do that. Sure, Greg, I'll do that. And he paused a couple of moments and he said, actually, I was looking this website the other day, and I found this company that you give them $600, they'll shoot your ashes up in fireworks. I think I would like that. I said, what? He said, yeah, it's a real thing. The company's called Holy Smoke. You can look it up, it's a real thing. They shoot you up in fireworks. I said, no, that's bizarre, that's weird, I'm not going to do that. We'll scatter them in the river. He said, okay, the river's fine. But the fireworks have been, no, we're not going to do the fireworks. I've since discovered there are all kinds of interesting things you can do with ashes. You can put them in a tattoo or in a stuffed animal or in a vinyl record. And there's even a company that will shoot your ashes up to the moon. I have no idea what that costs. But we settled on the river. But after he passed away, I realized now I have to take care of this thing, right? And another friend of ours, a woman he'd been romantically involved with off and on named Amy, she wanted to be involved. So we went to Greg's sister's house to get the ashes. I parked in the driveway and I froze. She said, what's the matter? I said, I've never done this before. I don't have experience with this. I don't know what to say. I mean, what do you say? She said, I'll go to the door with you. We went to the door. His sister answered the door. She said, oh, I've got the ashes here on the shelf. Just like he knew was going to happen, right? She handed me the box. I don't mean any disrespect by this, but I honestly thought, the first thought that came to me was, where's the rest of him? Greg was a large man, and I was thinking, this could be his head. Is there like a different box for a different... I honestly didn't know, and I'm glad I didn't say anything at that moment. We got back in the car, and Amy assured me, no, I've seen this before. That's him. We put him in back floorboard, and we went off toward the river. It was a hot day. We wanted something to drink, so we stopped at the grocery store to get something to drink, and then a whole other discussion ensued. Is it disrespectful to leave him in the car? But then if we take him in, something could go wrong. What if we put him in the cart and somebody takes our cart? This is like the beginning of a really bad sitcom, right? We decided it's okay to leave him in the car. We got our drinks, we waved goodbyes. I took the box down the steep rocky bank to the water's edge. Amy couldn't come down there. She had an issue with her leg. She stood up on the road and watched. And I opened up the box and took out the bag and opened up the bag and another bag and about three of those. And finally I got down to Greg's ashes. And I was preparing to scatter them into the water, and Amy says, "Do you think it'd be appropriate to sing a song right now?" I said, "Sure, I don't see why not." She said, "I can only think of one song." "Okay, what is it?" "Blowin' in the Wind." Amy, seriously? "Yeah, okay, go ahead." "The answer, my friend, is blowin' in the wind." She's singing as I'm scattering my friend's ashes into the river and into the wind. But when I got down to the bottom of the bag and there was just a little clump of ashes left, I remembered his other wish about the fireworks. And I saved that, and I thought, maybe we'll figure out a way to make that happen, buddy. So it's interesting to me, whenever I tell that story, usually people come and tell me their ashes stories, and there's always something funny about it. And it's interesting that a topic that's so solemn can have this laughter. And I know Greg wouldn't mind that at all. He would be honored to be included in a story that's still being shared today. And I want to go back to that sticky note, that phone call the last night of my friend's life. Because not only did it occur to me that I might be the last person he spoke to, it also, what hit me was, I didn't know. I didn't know my friend was going to die. He was sick, but he'd been sick for years. He always got better, or at least better enough. Nobody up there gave me the message that this is the last time you're going to talk to him. There was nothing wrong with our call. We didn't have any cross words, but it was just a mundane sort of call. If I had known it was the last time, there are things that I would have said to him that I never did say. Greg was my best friend. And when I've tried to explain this bond to some people, and when I say people, I mean men, they sometimes get a little uncomfortable with it, and they try to compare it to something. "Oh, you mean he was like a father?" "No." "Like an uncle?" "No." "Like a brother?" Brothers don't get to choose, right? Greg and I chose to be involved in each other's lives in a pretty intensive way for 17 years. Let me say it this way. A few years before he got sick, I got to a real low place. I was having marital issues. I got to a real dark place. When I was in that place, it felt like nobody wanted to touch me with a 50-foot pole. My father didn't come to help me. My uncles didn't. My sister didn't. I don't have a brother. There was only one person in the world who had the courage and the compassion to come into that dark valley and reach out a hand to me, and that was my best friend. You understand what I mean when I say best friend? He was my best friend, and I never told him that. I didn't tell him all the gifts he'd given me, all the wisdom he'd shared. He's the wisest man I ever knew. And you know what? I never told him that I loved him. Greg wasn't a hugger. We never hugged even once. But there was real love. You love your best friend, right? And I decided right then and there, my goodness, anytime I talk to anybody, that could be the last time. I have to treat life that way. Any interaction with anyone could be the last time. I don't want to have things that are unsaid. I don't want to have things undone. I don't want to have unfinished business. And I was looking at a big piece of unfinished business. I hadn't spoken to my dad in 2 years. And I got very serious about forgiving him. That's a whole other story. Maybe that would not have happened if not for the gift my friend had given me. There was other unfinished business, parts of myself I hadn't healed, parts of myself that needed love that I hadn't given love. And I decided to get very serious about all those things as well. Short time after my friend passed away, I attended one of these personal growth workshops. And we spent a day in that workshop learning to use death as an ally. I called the talk today an unlikely ally, because you might think, death as an ally? How can that be? It's such a scary thing. But we actually died, we didn't actually die. We died metaphorically in the workshop. We made our own headstone. We made our final speech to our friends and loved ones. And we did an activity that I'm going to tell you about. And we can't do it here today, but you might do it later. It's kind of a writing activity to a series of prompts. And the words are a little bit repetitive, but I'm going to say them because I think they're powerful if you let these words sink in. The activity is called 7777. Four sevens. There will come a time when you have exactly 7 years left to live. For some of us in this room, that time may have already come. If you knew you had only 7 years left to live, what would you do differently? How would you make your life matter? There will come a time when you have only 7 months left to live. For some of us, that time may have already come. If you knew you had only 7 months left to live, is there anything you'd stop doing that you currently do? Where would you want to be? Who would you want to be around? There will come a time when you have exactly 7 days left to live. And for some of us in this room, that time may have come. If you knew you had 7 days. There will come a time when you have exactly 7 hours left to live. There'll be a final phone call, a final conversation. If you knew you had 7 hours left to live, who would you want to have around you? What would you do with that time? I'm going to end this with a few moments of silence. I'm sure you've had someone who's transitioned who is important to you, and maybe you didn't get a chance to say everything you wanted to say. You don't have to, of course, but I'm going to suggest you might use this silence to just say a little message of thanks to that person, a little prayer, a little blessing. For all the gifts they gave you in their living, and maybe they gave you a gift like my friend did as well, the gift in his passing, he gave me the reminder that what we all have is precious. This life is precious.
Enjoy the sacredness of this moment. We want to just take a moment and take a little journey deep within and connect with that is within us that is eternal. So just take another deep breath. Relax into this moment, right here, right now. And if you'd like, you could close your eyes, or if you want to just focus on something in the room, but we're going to take an inward journey. Breathing in and breathing out, and giving ourselves permission to set aside all those thoughts and cares and things that keep us alert during the day. We just take a moment and set them in the basket as you begin to turn your focus inward. We're spiritual beings, you and I, on this human journey, this experience that we've just learned about with Anthony. That is all a part of our process as we make this journey through life, but there's also another journey that we can take, one deep within, and we can do it anytime we feel we need the strength, the love, the peace. And as we journey deep within, we're moving into that space where there is only the one presence and the one power, and we are it. We connect, we charge, we plug in. So as you step over that threshold into your inner chamber, feel energy swarming around you. Feel the warmth of the light of spirit glowing from the inside out. Feel yourself saying yes to this time apart, nurturing your spirit. And as you do so, just take a few moments, not thinking about anything in particular, but focusing your attention on spirit. Focusing your attention on that energy moving in and throughout you. Focusing your attention on who you truly are. Feeling the Christ within, growing. And as you feel that growth, as you feel that light, as you feel that burning deep within you, just sit a moment in the quiet and absorb in the silence. And as we prepare our minds and our hearts to return to the presence of this room and to those around us, I'm going to use the first person, and I want you to think on this statement. I am created in the image and likeness of God. Whole and strong in every way. I am created in the image and likeness of God, whole and strong in every way. I want you to say that with me, but I want you to say it quietly, but with conviction, with strength, together. I am created in the image and likeness of God, whole and strong in every way. And as you know that truth for yourself, I want you to direct this energy to someone in the room. You can face them if you like, or you can just look at them eye to eye, make that contact. But you are created in the image and likeness of God, whole and strong in every way. Say this to someone, to your neighbor, together. You are created in the image and likeness of God, whole and strong in every way. And now if there's anyone who you want to send this energy out to reach and touch so that they come into the warmth and the energy that we're feeling right now, let's affirm this for them by saying, we are created. We want to include everyone, the rulers of our nations. We want to include friends who may be going through trials this morning. We want to include all those we want to send this blessing out to together. We are created in the image and likeness of God, whole and strong in every way. And this morning we are decreeing it is so. We know it, we feel it, and when we leave this chapel, we walk in the energy of knowing I am created in the image and likeness of God, whole and strong in every way. And so it is.